Okay, thanks for talking to me. It's a very moving film, I'll have to say. I looked up what how do you say it? It's Ithaca, is it? Ithaca. Oh, Ithaca. Yeah, Ithaca. And it's can you talk to me about how this film came about? I mean, it's quite obvious that it's part of Julian's journey, but it's obviously part of the strategy to ensure that people understand what's actually going on.
Yes, so back in 2019, I went to in April of 2019, Julian was taken from the Ecuadorian embassy, and he was taken to to Belmarsh Maximum Security Prison, just outside of London. I went to see him at the prison. I think it was August or maybe a little bit earlier that year, and he was on suicide watch. He was being kept in the health wing in the prison, which is not like it's not like they bring you cups of tea and biscuits in a hospital bed. It is the health wing. The prisoners call it the hell wing because it has the most that's where there's insane people there, people who are terminally ill. There was one man who had no arms and legs, things like that. It's very, very it's very grim. And Julian was in the health wing in his cell 23 hours a day, which, essentially a solitary confinement there. And I went to see him at the prison, and I was there with my father and John Pilger. And we left that day. And that day I left, I felt that might be the last time that I ever see him again. I'd never sort of seen him like that over the years. When I'd been visiting him, like either under house arrest or in the Ecuadorian embassy, I'd never seen him like that. So it was at that point that I figured that we had to sort of try and get a different side of the story out. I'm a film producer. I usually produce drama. I've never produced a documentary before, but I've produced drama features. And so we sort of started to think about how we can tell a side of the story. And it was at that time that John was my father, John, and Julian's dad was traveling around Europe advocating for Julian. Coalescing these groups of politicians, doing media all over Europe. That we sort of thought that he would be the best way in to the story. And then so shortly after that we got a cameraman to follow John, and we followed John for the next 6 months in his travels around Europe. And then Ben Lawrence, the film's director, came on board, and we sort of launched into the extradition hearing, and that was in August in 2020.
It's fascinating because, as you say, this is a film that doesn't have the star in it.
That's right. It's sort of Julian's absence is his presence in a way, and we sort of learn about Julian through the people who love him, and the people who are closest to him. And I think it's very sort of, Julian's been taken away from everyone. He's been silenced, right? So the people who have become his voice are John and Stella, our two main participants. So they're the ones who are closest to Julian. They're the ones who are advocating for him. The whole he's sort of been Julian's been taken from the world and silenced, and so we learn about him through the people who love him, and how they experience Julian's persecution.
I mean, it's all very well for us to talk about this as a film because it works as a film incredibly well. But it's because it's such a living subject and it's so distressing. I mean, It's distressing to me, and I'm not you, and I'm not him, you know. So it's interesting to me that people are. It describes all the elements that are to do with the world that Julian Assange has actually exposed. So there's a private world. So in this film, we are stepping into people's privacy, as well as the issue of him as a citizen of the world being able to actually describe the outrageous nature of the illegality, I would say, of the court case against him.
Yes, and it's, you know, what we sort of set out to do was, you know, strike a balance between, you know, what are the characters in this film, John and Stella, their personal journey, you know, how we connect with them as an audience, but also the bigger story around Julian's persecution, you know, and the sort of corruption and, yeah, as you say, illegality. And you know, this sort of torturous machine that has sort of been set up before our very eyes. So it's always a balance that I think, you know, as Julian's family members, we try and, when advocating for him, we try and, you know, always there's always this, the personal connection is what gives us this power to speak to people, you know. But we also have to balance that with telling a different side of the story that you wouldn't usually hear about, because so much of the battle is sort of shifting. Stella in the film calls it shifting the criminality. You know, Julian is not a criminal. He exposed the criminals, and so we have to sort of shift the criminality away from Julian that's being put there by the state, and sort of try and shift it on to those who are actually responsible for the corruption or war crimes, and, you know, malfeasance that Julian exposed.
It's actually really fascinating the power of the personal connection and people who love him standing up for him. This is really, I mean, I know this is a funny little aside, but I remember thinking with my little girl, when my girl was a little girl, how powerful it was and how important it was to have a parent to advocate for your child at school. It never really understood it quite so powerfully as I did in that case. And it's exactly the same as this. Actually having someone say, I'm prepared to stand here and say this is a good person.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, you know, it's everyone can sort of understand it, right? Like that, it's this sort of powerful emotion that we all have to protect our children. You know, anybody who has a child, even those people who don't, can understand it. But to actually feel that, I think, you know, as a parent myself, we have all felt that and can understand that emotion. So it really is something that this sort of broad way of connecting with a broader, you know, I hope is that we're able to connect with a broader audience through this father fighting for his son, you know, through this sort of basic emotion that we all have to protect our children when they're in trouble.
Of course, it's slightly moved on the issue for Julian personally. We heard that he and Stella married, and also that this terrible situation of not being allowed to appeal the decision, it's all gone to about extradition, it's all gone to the legal honcho, head honcho in England to decide, even though it's been exposed as an entirely political process. That's what's happened now.
Yeah, that's right. It's at the Home Secretary now to sign off on the extradition, and then it will go to the Magistrates Court, and Julian will have another chance to appeal. But you know, the sort of legal battle is, it can go on forever, really. And the whole time Julian remains in prison, I think, on April 11th, it will be his third year in Belmarsh Maximum Security Prison, and he's not serving a sentence. He's a remand prisoner. It becomes so stark when you're visiting him and the other prisoners there. They all have a date, that they know that they're getting out or they can plan for. But Julian doesn't. And this thing, this sort of these court cases could go on for if it goes to the USA. I mean, to get to the Supreme Court can take up to 10, 12 years. So if you add that on top of the prison time he's already served, you're looking at, 15, 20 years of imprisonment, without being found guilty. So really what it is this veil of this sort of veil of legality that allows a certain section of society to switch off and say, well, Julian will get justice through the courts, believing that the courts are just. So his persecution is behind this veil of legality that sort of convinces a certain section of society that Julian will get his fair share, a fair trial, but really it's not happening that way.
No, it's actually quite shocking. It was so obvious that information that was put to the court, because I have been following this in fair detail, the information that was taken to court was not, their case was not an appropriate case. And the fact that Julian hasn't been allowed to actually read or see or confer with his lawyers, it makes a mockery of the system that they are pretending is a legal process.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. And people like back at home, Scott Morrison said that they can't comment on things that are, that the legal thing has to run its course. And, it's entirely a political case. Like espionage is a, it's a political charge. So, it needs a political solution, essentially. It needs for Scott Morrison to pick up the phone or the Prime Minister, whether after the election, whether it's Scott Morrison or Anthony Albanese, to pick up the phone and phone their counterpart in the USA and bring Julian home, basically use Australia's special relationship that they have with the US to bring Julian home.
It's fascinating too that, excuse me, it's quite clear, you point out in the film that Julian Assange actually believes in the rule of law. It's quite clear, and it's quite shocking to have it exposed that our economic and political overlords are actually a lawless bunch of thugs.
Yeah,
I know that's a bit of a hot potato, but it is pretty stark. I mean, it's very similar to the way in Australia that the refugees who arrive in boats are just summarily kept in jail for 9 years for no reason at all. It's quite bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the reason, Julian created WikiLeaks, because of these power structures that, work in secret, who do things in our name. And he saw using new technologies that he could, create a sort of disruption to these power structures, and sort of educate people to make better decisions about their society through leaks that were, sort of crowd sourced in terms of their journalism. So, I hope this film sort of, follows in that. Obviously it's not going to have the same impact that WikiLeaks did, but I hope it sort of follows in that tradition of, exposing what the powerful get up to.
Yeah, of course, because WikiLeaks still exists, of course. So therefore, it's still possible for people to get information about what's, the good work that he was doing effectively.
Yes, all the whole archive is still online. Even all the leaks that Julian, all the publishing that Julian is being charged for at the moment, which is the Iraq war logs, the Afghan war diaries, the diplomatic cable set, and the Guantanamo Bay detainee files, all of that information still exists online on the WikiLeaks website. So it hasn't been censored. In the sort of times now where things are so easily erased, WikiLeaks hasn't managed to keep everything online and available for students, journalists, lawyers, all to draw on to make our societies better.
It's interesting in the film. It's a very delicate film because the people that come to outside, very famous people, in fact, come without any fanfare to show support, in a sense, on the street, which is quite telling.
We have Vivienne Westwood, Ai Weiwei. Ai Weiwei came to the court, John Pilger. So all these people who understand what's at stake in this case, what's at stake in Julian's persecution. And I think Ai Weiwei really sums it up. It's the fight. It's the fight that gives the work meaning. If Julian wasn't if Julian's work didn't elicit this response from, the most powerful nation on the world, would it really be important, or would it have an impact? And I think, it's the fight around that and around getting Julian out that really gives all the work that has been done meaning. I agree with Ai Weiwei on that one.
Where did you get the title Ithaca? Who came up with it? It's because it's obviously a very held, a fond held philosophical perspective, and also your father is a very philosophical man.
Yeah, so when John's on the road, when things aren't going right and all seems lost, he listens to, there's a poem by Cattleby, Ithaca. It's called Ithaca. It's about, obviously, it's a home, the Odyssey. Ithaca is the home of is it Odysseus? I think it is,
Yeah, it's
where,
Odysseus. I just never real
where.
I'd never seen that written down. I know about it, but now that you it's brought up. So, I mean, the definition, the meaning of life, or as he calls it, Ithaca, he notes that as we all try to achieve our goals, it is important not to lose sight of the journey.
Yes, that's right, and that's and I think as John is the sort of self-taught builder designer, Stella is a lawyer, and they've sort of been thrust on this, thrust onto the sort of global stage, in defending and advocating for Julian, and I think it's sort of a lesson for anyone else who wants to do some advocacy or activism that, it's not about the destination. It's just about, taking that first step, like launching yourself on that journey. And I think, that's what we tried to say, with the title. It's really about the journey and not the destination. I heard someone say, oh, is Australia Ithaca? Is Australia Julian's Ithaca? Which I thought was a sort of nice interpretation as well.
Oh yeah, okay. Well, he might like Australia to stand up and fight back.
Yeah, that would be, yep.
What are you hoping from the film?
Well, we are going, we'll go ahead with a theatrical release in Australia on the 21st of April, which will be in the lead up to the election. We've got quite a large impact campaign planned. So, really sort of raised Julian's issue in the lead up to the Australian election, and hopefully, you know, make it, you know, force people to take a political position one way or another in the lead up to the Australian election. So that's the sort of, you know, that's our sort of plan, is to sort of use it to bring Julian home, really.
It's kind of interesting to me that in a lot of ways this story, like I was going back to when I was talking about that idea of standing up for your child at school, it really does tap straight into the psychological underbelly of Australia, or maybe even the convict past element of never being a tall poppy, not putting your head above the parapet, reading the wind, who's got the power, and when is it important to sit on your hands, even though you know there's a unfairness afoot. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, sort of. I think, yeah. I sort of do. I mean, you know, I think, you know, Julian is the ultimate underdog, though, right? And Australia's always loved an underdog story too. So I think, you know, there's elements of that, and also, I think, you know, I feel like we as Australians have this sort of, you know, a sort of disrespect for authority. A little bit, you know, maybe it is the convict path, but, you know, we're sort of, you know, very suspicious. I think we're very suspicious naturally around, you know, around authority, which is, I think, why we've sort of found, you know, Australia is really the base for this film. You know, we've gotten a lot of support here, and it wouldn't have been possible without people coming on board and backing this project from Australia. It's very much an Australian film in that way. And
that's,
I don't
very
think we could have made it. Yeah, I don't think we could have made it any other way. And that was very heartening to me, that, you know, Australia and the people here really, really support Julian's cause, and you know, gave us the sort of backing to make this project.
There's a really lot at stake. I mean, it's not just him that's at stake, that's at the core of the film. It's not to be forgotten. But there's so many other things at stake over this issue.
Yes, it is. I mean, you know, freedom of the press is a major, major issue these days, and this sort of espionage prosecution, the extraterritorial nature of, you know, the espionage prosecution against Julian, where the USA is able to reach in anywhere and take a journalist and a publisher and prosecute them under US law. So, you
know, that's just insane.
Yeah, it is. It is, and I think also it's, you know, very much, you know, what we can expect as Australians if we do get into trouble with, you know, our big ally, you know, as Australian citizens, we sort of don't expect any help if you become a target of the USA. It's very much a clear message to any Australian.
But anyway, good work. You've done a great job. I'm really, I was really impressed with what you did. I was really impressed with people being so close to the story and then coming up with a cogent film. And then I found that you're responsible for Emu Runner, right?
Yes, I was part of the producing team on that one. Yeah.
Yeah, which is a lovely film. And
yeah,
sweet. Yeah, it's a very sweet film. And it. I just thought the editing process, it must have been a really fascinating affair.
Yes, it was. I mean, we had Karen Johnson, who's a fabulous documentary editor. Very lucky to have her on board, and she was able to pull it all together, because we had so much observational footage that she had to sort of wade through and you know, pull a story out of, basically. And she used those great interviews that Ben did with John. I think Ben did about 13 hours of interview with John in the kitchen there. And that sort of formed the backbone, really, of the film. So, yeah, it was a long process. It was a bit, probably over 6 months of editing.
And also the expressiveness of Stella. What a stellar person Stella is.
Oh, she's amazing. She's incredible.
Yeah,
Yeah,
incredible
she
person.
just has gotten, it's amazing to see her, just become this awesome advocate for Julian.
Yeah, it's a
Incredible.
lovely put together. I mean, those interviews, the environments that they're in is really are really interesting, really well put to, very tasty for in terms of storytelling. I know it's a bit rude because filmically it works. The film is really good as a
Yes.
film. I found it very it's almost like being caught in an undertow, a very long slow motion undertow, this film.
It is, harrowing when it's in.
Harrowing. Yes, it is. Anyway, thank you for giving me time.
No worries. Thanks, Eddie.